עוד יותר, יוצרי התוכן של ישראל.
Welcome back to the Olim TLV podcast. I am here with Aaron. I'll let you introduce yourself real quickly.
Hey everyone, I'm Aaron Boers, and great to be on the show today with Noah, an old and close friend.
2 years.
Yeah. Well, yeah, old. Yeah. Old in the scheme of Olim.
That is true.
In the scheme of the Olim timeline.
That is true.
Which is usually, you know, one quarter or maybe half a year and out. So
big turnover rate with the Olim.
A lot of attrition. It's because Shavata has been closed for too long.
I 100% agree. Yeah. Before we start the episode today, I want to talk about the comedy show that was last weekend with Matan, Michael, and a surprise guest, Tiffany Haddish. Aaron was also there.
It was incredible. You organized it, so you should pat yourself on the back a bit. I mean, it was fantastic. Not only did you get Michael Rapaport, but you even one-upped yourself there. No offense to Michael Rapaport, but you brought someone who was totally unexpected and a little bit less vocal through all of this. And I thought that was a huge surprise and much needed boost for everybody, not just the people at the show.
But it was also a surprise for me. I was in on it last minute also. My roommate helped with that out. She helped bring her, but it was insane. Tiffany Haddish, I don't know who's tuning in, watch the show, but she was phenomenal. She crushed it. She chose out of everyone in the room to pick on the religious arse-like boy from Netanya. And the whole time she was just making sexual jokes with him and everyone was dying from laughter. I don't think I've ever heard the crowd like that.
I think he himself, so she talked about licking his nipples for about 30 minutes.
Literally 30 minutes.
I'm convinced that afterwards he went home and sure enough, he found a way to have somebody or something lick his nipples. I'd be you know, shocked if he hasn't already
experienced
reassessed his own life and his own priorities. I mean, 100%. she really dug into him a little bit too much.
A little too much. It was actually 30 minutes of just going at him. Everyone was, what is going on?
Yeah, but she got into it. She came with a lot of energy for someone who just landed.
I mean,
pretty impressive.
She was phenomenal. Anyways, that was a lovely, lovely comedy show. Huge thank you to Matan, Michael, and everyone who participated and came. I'm so excited to have you here. Aaron is someone I personally, and a lot of Olim, look up to in many ways. But I want you to introduce yourself first, kind of your Aliyah story, where you're from, and what you do.
Amazing. That's the first time I've heard that other Olim look up to me. Are you sure you have 100%. Like data to back this up? Or you
were 11 of the week. Did you see how much traction that post gained?
Yeah, well, I was in the army. So everyone just likes everything that is army related right now, you know, I think.
Still, look at the comments. Go through after and you'll see what I'm talking about.
All right, cool. I'll massage my ego a little later. What was the question?
Tell us about yourself, where you're from, why'd you make Aliyah?
Wow, I'm kind of, I think I'm beyond the statute of limitations for Olay Chadash.
Yeah.
I've been here for 14 years. So I don't know that I qualify anymore as an Olay Chadash, but let's pretend that I am one, I guess. I came here from New York, grew up in Great Neck, Long Island. Which, if anyone tuning in is wondering, because this is like always the follow-up question. No, I'm not Persian. I'm an honorary Persian. You have to eat at Kolbe 15 times within the span of 2 years in order to get an honorary Persian status. It's only good for a year, though. So grew up in Great Neck. Great, privileged, easy childhood. Not going to
sugarcoat it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a place where the education is phenomenal. I think we were public school, the number 8 high school in the country. I got to grow up with teachers who weren't Jewish but respected Judaism, and also the majority of the school was Jewish. So it's a public school where anti-Semitism is the least cool thing that you can come, you know, through the doors with. So for me, it was easy to express my love for Judaism, the Hebrew tribe, for the state of Israel, and I grew up with that core identity. from Great Neck. And that's, you know, bleeding into your other, you know, the other part of the question is why I moved here. So
you chose to move right after high school.
Yeah, I did. I don't think a lot of people know this. I did do a year of college. Like, technically, I was a college dropout for a while.
Oh, okay. Did not know that.
Great album, Kanye West. Good guy. I was a college dropout. I went to Skidmore, which is a horrible sounding college and also just a bad college.
I've never heard of that college before.
For me. It's hard to get into. You have to have a 90 GPA or whatever. But it's one of those liberal arts schools. It's small. Students are more interested in getting high than getting higher education. So it was nice. Beautiful campus, Saratoga Springs. I hated it. I didn't want to be in academia anymore. I had done 9 APs in high school. Mm-hmm. I was the president of the high school. I did all these extracurriculars. I really, for those 4 years, exerted myself socially and academically, and I didn't feel the need to continue that at that moment. And that was where I think the yearning to go to Israel finally clicked and made sense. So the stars did have to align. It's not like I knew, okay, I'm going to finish high school, suit up, and go to join the IDF. Things had to align. There's also doors that need to close sometimes for the other one to open wide enough.
And what age was that at?
Thanks for cutting me off. Because I could have droned on for a while. That's good. You should have like a buzz here.
I've been getting good at it, so no need for one.
All right, amazing. That was 19 that I finished that first year, and then that summer was when I moved here. And it was a struggle at first, for sure. I came here with no Hebrew.
And you're also not Israeli, which is a big deal. I think, like, for me, moving here, I moved, first of all, after college, not high school. And second of all, I'm American-Israeli. So for me, it was way easier. I had the Hebrew. I have family here. But I'm always so fascinated by American Jews, or just not just Americans, but Jews who move to Israel and make Aliyah without being Israeli. Like, that fascinates me.
Well, my parents... So I think it's important also, my parents met here. So they're not Israeli, but they had kind of Israel in their history and in their DNA, kind of. So, you know, my dad came from Holland. He's Dutch, which is also something people don't know. I have more Dutch family than I do American family, actually. And my mom came from Long Island, and the two of them met in Tel Aviv and lived together for a few years in Israel. So even though they weren't citizens and even though they weren't born Israeli, they came back with that strong identity. Yeah. And of course, those core memories, which we grew up with. So I think that shaped a lot of my, you know, longing to be here. And despite all that, you're right. It was very difficult to
come here
at that age.
And you joined the army, right? Initially.
Yeah. I think I'll get to it in a second, because I think it's interesting, the debate about what's easier, what's harder. I was lucky to come here at age 19. Mm-hmm. The fact that I didn't know Hebrew was, it was a travesty. I mean, in the army, I was a fucking idiot. Every time the commanders would tell me to run to this building, I would nod, you know, smile, just smile and wave, boys. You know, like, I would just nod, like, yes, Mifakit. And I'd run to the wrong building and bring the wrong thing and whatever. I was just a terrible soldier, which sucks, because usually I like to try to level up in everything I do, but I just accepted the fact that, like, I'm going to get through the IDF and not be some officer, you know, and like sign keva and whatever. Same with the sayarot, same with like all those other units. I was barely surviving off the fact that I didn't know any of the language. So that was definitely a struggle. But what was amazing about doing the army at such a young age is that I got to like build and, you know, really plant roots here. I built a crazy foundation. I mean, I also wasn't considered a lone soldier on paper. So they messed up the paperwork. Of course they did.
Classic.
Yeah. So they didn't pay me like a lone soldier. They didn't give me a house like a normal lone soldier. And then that meant that I had to go sleep. Like, friends from my squad in boot camp would take me in. So, like, I was like some orphan boy that got passed around, kicked around between different foster homes. And I was in the north in Almagor, which is, if you've never heard of Almagor, that makes sense. It's a moshav in the north. It's they've got really great mangoes. Wonderful. Really worth visiting if you have a heart on one day for mangoes. And then you've got, I was in like Ginot Shomron or something. It was like outside of Kfar Saba for a few months. And just bounced around and lived in tons of different places. But what it did is also introduced me to all different types.
Yeah, you built your foundation here, which I think is very hard when you make Aliyah and you don't have that.
Well, it pokes... it. it I didn't start in a bubble. Yeah. I started like all over the country, meeting different people, all walks of life. I had tons of Ethiopians with me in boot camps. Like I also got, you know, a little bit of a sneak peek into what their lives are like. And all of that just kind of shaped really. Yeah.
And then you went ahead and did IDC. Went to IDC.
I did it.
Yeah. You did. Reichman University.
Yeah, so I went to IDC Herzliya, Reichman University. Finally got it. He finally did it, Reichman, you old dog.
The
you
college got, experience of Israel.
Yeah, you got your university stamp. It was fantastic. Less of a school, more of a playground.
I'm curious if Israelis would agree with that also.
No. Like,
you don't think they would agree?
I don't know. Do we have anyone calling in? I think Israelis...
Like, do they also consider it a playground, or do they think it's a very serious, like, school?
I think, first of all, I want to...
Preface.
Yeah. For RRIS, for the international school, it definitely... There were people that took it very seriously. But for the most part, most of us were looking for experience rather than education.
Yeah.
And I do think it's different for Israelis. They have the experiences, and on weekends, they're not, like, looking to meet new Olim, you know? They're not, like, looking to explore, I don't know, they're not hanging out in the dorms, which they now have at IDC. Like, they're going home to their families and seeing their friends who are at other schools, and, like, they have, you know, their girlfriends, boyfriends, whatever, from high school that are waiting there, and, like, we were different. We're a different breed. We're there, of course, usually on our own, and I think that makes you act, of course, a bit differently. So you don't have that stability and you go off the rails a bit. And it's a fun experience. Some people went too off the rails. Some people not enough.
Did you?
I think I was balanced. Okay. I started IDC also. I was different. I didn't come straight from America. Like I had a few years here where I'd settled in. And I had an Israeli girlfriend when I started at IDC. So for the first half of college, I was actually in a relationship. I was still class rep. Like, I love school politics.
You would be class rep.
Everywhere I go, like, school politics. I don't know what the fuck's wrong with me. I'm in a hospital right now. I'm going to run for class president. It's not even a position, but I'm going to just do it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. Like, once that relationship ended, I just started to really socially get into things and started to plan all these events. And, like, that just became what I was known for. Like, everyone at IDC during that time knows me as the guy who throws parties. Yeah.
Which is how we also met, which we'll get to. But I think I want to talk about, like, the difference between college life here in America. And for a lot of the people listening, some of them are currently in America and are debating making Aliyah and taking that step of doing college here. I know personally, I was actually thinking of doing the Army at age 18 and then doing IDC here. And my parents were like, we want you to get a U.S. education first, and then you can do whatever you want with your life. But I'm curious as to how you see the difference between do you regret going to IDC rather than continuing that college education in America? Are you grateful for that experience you gained here? Like, how do you see the difference, and what can you tell people who are listening, like, if they're considering making the step?
I think that people are obsessed with it's very linear thinking, or it's very much people are on a track and they get really scared if they fall behind while they're running track. But you know, you're not in a 200 meter sprint. You're in like a marathon, a loop that just keeps going and going. Like, that's life. And I think people are so obsessed with the idea that, like, they're going to fall behind their friends. I know I was. Like, when I was in the IDF, I loved my choice. I loved being a lone soldier in the IDF. But I was 20 years old, 21 years old, and I was seeing my friends at, like, a Michigan football game, okay, wearing the colors and going...
Go Blue!
Doing keg stands. Go Blue. Yeah. One of my best friends went there, so go Blue. But that's tough to see. Sure, you have FOMO, right? And also now, like, I'll flip to where we are a little bit later in life, where it's about career. It's like, oh, they're making more money than me in New York. Or, it's much easier if I stay in LA because, you know, everyone around me speaks English, and here there's a language barrier. And yeah, there's a lot more challenges, of course. But I think that really the best, you know, the marrow, the good juice, the zest for life, all of that stuff is behind the wall that you have to climb over, or walls you have to climb over as an Olé. And a lot of people don't get to the other side because they often quit in the middle. And that's sad. So yeah. I can tell you that there's like 10% of my IDC class that's left. We were the class of 2015. business, smart kids, marketing, finance. So many have left, gone back to Europe, either to pick up where their parents' business has left off, or just find better jobs where it's like you get paid, you know, 30 to 50% more than, well, it's an exaggeration, 20 times more. If I made 20 times more than what I make now.
If you work in consulting here, it might be 20 times more.
20 times more? Tom, all right, for 20 times more, get me on a plane right now. We're not, you know, we're talking about such exaggerated numbers. But yeah, no, I think it makes sense to me why some people leave. I just wish that sometimes people would stretch just a little bit more.
Yeah.
And they'll realize that they're not going to break. And I think that that's the problem right now with Olim in Tel Aviv.
Yeah. And we'll get to that also. But I want to touch base on how you were considered the party kid at IDC. Aaron and I, how we actually met is our friend Lolly introduced us. And she was like, this was a year ago almost. Yeah. Purim or Independence Day last year.
Well, I've known you. Oh, so yeah. I haven't known you for
2 years. 1 year. A year.
Oh, wow. So really such an old friend.
Such an old
dear friend. Yeah.
But that's how it works here in the Olim community. Aaron reached out to me and he's like, hey, I heard you run this Instagram account, Olim and TLV. I want to throw a party. And I was like, I know nothing about parties, but let's do it. We didn't end up doing it. we just got coffee and that was it.
Yeah, story of my life. So I'm really at this stage where I've let go in the sense that I'm focused on my career, but just every time there's a fucking holiday, I can't get it out of my head that I'm supposed to throw a party.
How old are you?
My age is unimportant. I don't see how that's relevant to the discussion. carry the two. I'm 34 years old.
Yeah. 34.
Yeah. Oh wow. Okay. Yeah. 34. but I read at a 25-year-old level.
So. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, do you think that IDC party life is comparable to college life in America?
Hard to say because I've never really... I've visited them on their campuses. I think it's more tame for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think it's of course different in the sense that at least at the beginning, IDC wasn't really a campus. It didn't have dorms. Mm-hmm. So, you know, nightlife existed in... more like nightclubs and things like that. It was
Do
like
they have fraternities at IDC? At IDC?
There was one.
API.
API.
Yeah. Were you class president?
I never. No.
You never joined.
API. Yeah. I have some friends who were in API, so I'll just keep my comments to myself. I think that could have been something great. You guys should rethink some of the, you know. Some of the things you do there. But yeah, there was one fraternity.
Okay. But also like talking about how a lot of your friends left after, I mean, 10% of your class and I'm sure other friends, not just from IDC. It's something I'm definitely going through right now. Like I made Aliyah 4 years ago and I think 50% of the people I came here with and I met here have already left. And it's something very hard to deal with. It's like you come here, you build this family of friends because your friends here at the end of the day are your family. And one by one, they all start leaving. And, you know, for some, it's different reasons, right? Career can make more money other places. For some, it's about finding zugiyot, a relationship, which is hard sometimes in Tel Aviv. For some, they just struggle. They struggle being without family here. And I think it's something that Olim, like, I know there's a big focus right now in a lot of communities and Olim communities in Israel to keep Olim here. Kind of fellows and other organizations that their goal is to really help Olim build a framework here to keep them here. But it's very challenging. And I'm like, how did you deal with seeing all your friends leave and not give in to also leaving?
First of all, no, I just want to say I'll be your friend.
That's so sweet. I really appreciate that.
I thought about it a lot. And I actually came here before we didn't have time to speak before we started recording. But I want to tell you, I made the decision to be your friend.
So grateful.
So even though you've lost a few, you've gained.
gained one.
So I don't know the math there, but it'll stabilize. And that's, I'm making jokes, but that's actually, look, I've been here again, 14 years. I've had tons of amazing friends leave. My core group of friends is no longer here. So like we were four guys, we traveled together all the time. Now we meet up every 2 years in a different country, or we try, depending on the situation. This year will be tougher. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, it just looks different. But at the same time, you know, you kind of replenish what you've lost or who's left, and you meet new people, and it opens you up to, I think, continuing to expand your network and your circle. So there's pros there, too. I know a lot of people who do end up leaving because their core group of friends has also left. But at the same time, if you stay, like there are groups, there are ways to meet.
You always meet here.
Lot of people. Yeah, I don't think Tel Aviv is considered, like I know people who have moved abroad, especially to New York, for instance. Like they've moved from Israelis that have moved from Israel to New York. And they struggle to meet new people. That makes total sense to me. They really struggle to meet new people unless they go and they stick to exactly the type, right, of people that they're used to. I don't think that's a problem in Israel at all.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I think it's very hard to meet. It's very easy to meet people here. But it is sad at the same time to see your old friends go and to always be in that, should I move back, mode.
Yeah.
It's part of it.
I think that's, but that's having two homes.
Yeah.
I think that no matter what, even if friends were here and everything seems peachy and perfect, you always in the back of your head will have, you know, you still have your family there. So like, okay, so my friends never left. My parents still live in New York. And my brother lives in New Jersey. And, that's still, it's always going to be two homes. Which is why you need to be filthy rich and then have a house in Great Neck. And an apartment, a penthouse in Tel Aviv.
Amen, that's the dream. The dream. And Liot Alakav, which is every... Do you know what Liot Alakav means?
Yeah.
To be on a... I don't even know how to translate that.
To be on the line.
On the line, yeah. Yeah.
To be on the line.
The dream. But Aaron, I actually thought you were the perfect person to bring here because I feel like for Olim, there are two different routes to... Like, people make Aliyah through two different routes. One is like the Masa programs where they all live in Gindi and then they... you know, make Aliyah after. And the second one is doing the Army/IDC and then making Aliyah and finding your way through tech also, which you also managed to do.
But are there only two routes to come? I think that used
mostly,
to be the case.
Mostly two routes.
Yeah, but now you have tons of different programs and you also have people that are coming here without programs who just get 100%. A job and like they're moving here because...
There are different routes, but they're mostly like if you take, 90% of the Olim in Tel Aviv.
It's like or you were a Chayal Boded or you came as a student or you came through a program. Yeah, yeah.
And you did both Chayal Boded and you were a student and now you work in tech. I mean, still working in tech?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Which we'll talk about.
Was I fired or?
I mean, you've been injured, which.
Are you telling me live on this show that I've been let go?
Oops,
or?
My bad. Oops.
There was an Eretz Ner there at the skit now about a Miluimnik who comes back to work.
And gets laid off.
They make like a party for him. Basically, they make it seem like a very fun thing. Like, oh yeah, you need time to rest, of course. Like, here are all your things, and we've obviously replaced you.
Well, I hear that they've been doing that. Which is horrendous, but
that's horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
I can tell you, it's not a plug, but I can tell you that my company has been ridiculously supportive throughout all of this. So I work at a place called Hiro. And I won't say what we do because it's not interesting, but AI. My CEO has been to the hospital. I'm not joking. I've lost count, but probably over 15 times.
I saw that when I was there.
Yeah, hours at a time. Like my VP product, our VP HR, I don't know, everybody in the management team and my own team. I have a department of like 15 people. They've come constantly. I mean, it's ridiculous the amount of support I've felt. And I know I'm spoiled by that because we just talked about Miluimnik game that are getting, reservists that are not being treated so well. But I'll tell you that for me, it like, of course, now makes it very difficult for me to think about leaving such a work environment and culture. So that's at least one company that hasn't, done it. So
can you quickly tell us how you got into high tech and the company you work for?
Yeah.
For all the Olim who are struggling to get into tech.
Actually, connection from the Army. So there was another American in a different battalion. He worked at Checkpoint and knew a few people there. And as I was graduating with my business and marketing degree from IDC, he set me up with an interview. And I finagled my way into Checkpoint, which is a great place to start. And built from there. I went to Google for 2.5 years. And now I'm at this startup, Hiro. It's going to be my fifth year this week, actually, which sucks. I'd love to celebrate it there, but of course, I'm still technically hospitalized. Mm-hmm. So.
And your CMO, is that the...
Yeah, I was promoted.
Chief Marketing Officer.
Oh, people don't know that yet. Well, so I guess, I'll announce it now. But yeah.
Am I just revealing everything on this podcast?
No, so it's I am CMO of the company. I just haven't like formally announced it anywhere.
Announce it now. Official.
Great. So I'm the CMO of Hiro, which is awesome. I'm going to start to focus a lot more on investor relations and things like that. It's a lot more fun. And I mean, five years is crazy for anybody, but I was the first employee, so I've grown the company, seen it.
Got lots of options.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think anyway, no matter how many options I have, there's still that like product designer at Monday who has $5 million
100%.
From just coasting for a few years. So.
Literally coasting.
You know, like I'm good, but should have taken that job at DePulse before it was fucking Monday.com. That would have been great.
So yeah, I think a lot of Olim also are very interested in getting into tech. I feel like you really are the prime like Ole example, like Army, IDC, tech, and not to mention the war and serving in Miluim and going back. And like, I think for me, hearing your October 7th story and your whole experience, and for everyone who heard it, was very moved by it. And there's nothing more I would like than for you to share your story with the audience.
Fantastic. So do you want to...
Where were you October 7th?
All right, yeah. So I was going to say we can break it down maybe just a bit. But speaking of high tech and my job, so I was at a conference. Mm-hmm. I fly quite a bit to healthcare conferences in the U.S., digital health. And that's where it found me. So I was at Chicago... I was in Chicago for a conference, flew to Vegas, got off the flight. I had like 20 missed calls from my wife. I got married in August, so very, very recent, especially at the time that this happened. And, you know, as I'm getting off the plane, this is all starting to unfold. And I was just glued to this TV in a suite in Encore, like watching the world collapse, or my world collapse, you know, in Israel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, canceled my flight. My unit, like, of course, right as Delta sends a message, your flight's canceled. My unit gets called up. It's up Shmone. And that's it. I scrambled, you know, for a few days to get a flight. During that time, I was in this conference because I had nothing else to do. Like,
wow.
I was just waiting for all these groups to find me some chartered flight for reservists and, like, walking around like a zombie on the conference floor. Got back, joined my unit. You know, we trained a bit down south. There's like a mock city of Gaza. It's called Mala. And we did a few drills and it started to, it's crazy. It's things I haven't done since I was, you know, really 21 years old. I mean, training drills that are serious and you know that you're actually going to need them. It's very, has a different context to it, has a different level of seriousness. And then we trained for a bit. They kept telling us, you're going in, you're not going in.
Was there any hesitation, by the way, when you were in America? Like, maybe I shouldn't come back? Like, maybe... Or no. You were just feeling that, like all of the Israelis say, I mean, Matan said the same thing, Israelis have this burning, like, passion to come back and serve and be with the country.
I mean...
Some Olim left, including me. I mean, it's different. Obviously, you served in the army, but still.
I know, like, lone soldiers that left.
Yeah.
I know...
Yeah?
I know, yeah. I knew a lot of people that were leaving, which is, of course, you know, a little bit... depressing in one sense, but trying not to be judgmental, it, you know, makes sense to each their own. But I, you know, I'm not that guy. Like, I came here to volunteer in the defense of Israel. That's the reason I came to Israel. The core foundation of everything I've built here thereafter is on that. So when Israel needs me to defend it, right? And let's be real, it's not like I'm some, you know, I'm not in some crazy covert elite unit that's going to save the hostages. But when my unit is called up, if they think we're useful in the defense of Israel, the idea of me staying in the United States is absolutely fucking bonkers. That's ludicrous. My wife was called, she's Israeli, but she was, of course, freaking out. And I think she would have preferred if I would have gotten on a flight instead to, you know, Great Neck, New York, to hang out at Chino's Pizza or Kolbe. till this whole thing blew over, but that was never going to happen. And, you know, I think she understood that deep down, and so did I. And that's it. We went in. We were part of the first wave. That was surprising. Tsuk Eitan, I was also in Protective Edge in 2014, but we were on the border. So this was going into Gaza. I knew they were going to send us in at some point, but the fact that we were part of that first big wave on October 30th,
that
was wild. Considering that we're reservists, but we did it, you know.
What, you know, tell us what happened to you while you were in Gaza.
So yeah, I think for purpose of brevity, I'll you know, give the abridged version. But we went in on foot, 6 kilometers, which was scary as hell. Like each step, just another step towards kind of this apocalyptic Mordor-like, you know, Stranger Things upside down world. where everything smells funky and the sky is always blasting orange. That's how I describe Gaza now. But we went into Beit Hanun, house by house. And when this happened to me, it was just another one of those moving the needle, you know, inch by inch, getting to our target destination, which was Jabalia, to move south. And as we were moving house by house, we had to cross, at one point, a school, an UNRWA school. And we were a little bit too exposed that day. All this time, I'm part of the officer squad. So I'm with the Samech Mempe, or he's like the assistant commander of the platoon. And we closed the force. So we're the last to cross. And Hamas, they love to wait. Their snipers, at least, love to wait and try to pick off officers. And so that's what happened to us. So we were the last to cross. There's a school, UNRWA. It's like this scary building. We also know what Hamas does with
schools.
Schools, hospitals, places of worship. Mm-hmm. They like to take what should be out of bounds as it relates to, you know, also the rules of war. And sure enough, put those things right in bounds. And we don't know how to play that game so well because we're not evil, psychopathic terrorists. Mm-hmm. And so they have a tunnel entrance in the school and there's a weapons depot and we suspect all these things, but we cross anyway and we're too exposed. And while we're crossing, my commander stops, and which is protocol, it's the right thing. And but I didn't want to stop. So I took the guy with me and I went to the entrance of the house and I told him this. I said, I have a bad feeling, let's move. When we got to the house, I turned around to see if he had followed me or where he was. He was standing there still. And as I was turning around, I heard and I saw he got shot and also his comms person got shot. So two people I was very close with, especially my officer, and two people I had grown close with either over the course of the reserves or also just, you know. And they were both on the ground. So little bit of shock, but very quickly I took off my bag and started shooting back at the school to the place where I heard the AK-47 shots. And after about 2 to 3 minutes of returning fire, I looked over at my officer and he looked like he was in terrible condition. So I decided to sprint to try to save his life. I thought that if I could get to him in time and if I could pull him out of there, he'll live. But as it turns out, as it would turn out, he was already killed. So the sniper that eventually shot me in my legs, that sniper was able to get off a headshot, and that's what started the firefight in the first place. So my officer was actually killed before I got to him, and there was nothing we could do. But I sprinted out anyway in the hopes of saving life, which is a common theme, actually. If you look at a lot of the people who are getting injured or killed in Gaza now, it's in the effort to save other soldiers. And as I was pulling him up, trying to get him out of there, I got shot in my right leg, was on the ground, had to crawl back to the house myself, so basically save myself. And I'm super lucky to be alive. I'm lucky that the sniper bullet didn't just take off my limb, which is what I thought happened at first when I first, you know, heard, felt, etc. I crawled back. I was shot in my left leg with an AK-47. It went through muscle. I had rock hit me in my right side and my lower right back and pretty dangerous places to get something stuck in. So I was bleeding from four different places. My paramedic thought I wasn't going to make it. It was like I was critically injured. I went on a crazy trip, you know, thought about my life, thought about the future. And I don't know, I woke up, thank God, in Sheba, where, you know, the doctor told me I'd make a full recovery. So it's pretty lucky story, all things considered.
Yeah. I remember seeing those first pictures of you from like, and then in Instagram and all that. And I immediately texted you and I was like freaking out and you were already storing stuff and you just had such a positive outlook and you still do an attitude on everything. Like you know, I see all these interviews. Aaron has blown up recently in social media. I mean, all famous people who've come to visit, Scooter Braun, Michael Rapaport, they've all visited him.
4,000 followers.
How many did you have before?
I don't know.
900, 1,000?
Actually, yeah. That's spot on.
That's a pretty big climb.
Ooh.
But I remember seeing all these interviews with Scooter Braun and Natasha, Raquel, I think, and Michael Rapaport and all these things. And I was like, wow, he has such a positive attitude even after all the hell he's been through. And I'm just wondering, well, how have you been able to maintain that through this time?
Yeah, I think I'll start with this. I'll say that I have it pretty easy. I mean, I think the positivity is also reflective of the fact that I'll make a full recovery. So if I had come out of, you know, this this event and the doctor had said to me, you know, you lost your leg, you know, we had to amputate, I think I'd be, I don't know that I'd be the same guy. Like, I hope that that's the case, right? But I'm not sure that that's true, you know, in all honesty. So I think I have a lot of luck, and built off that is the ability to be really grateful with everything that's happening and to look at things through a positive lens, because my situation is not as bad as it could be. So of course I'm not going to be, you know, cranky and irritable. I'm going to be thankful and happy. And I think that that's a big part of this. But in general, the people around me have really made it so that that's possible. The kind of camaraderie, not just from soldiers in the army, but just that I felt from people I've never met before, is wild. Like, I've lost count of the amount of people that show up to Sheba to visit, and the amount of donations,
the amount of food you guys get also.
Yeah, it's a little bit, it's become a little bit absurd. I mean, I can only imagine what's going to happen during Purim.
I was visiting Aaron a month or something ago, and I brought him these cookies, and I was like, oh, this is so cute, these cookies from the bakery, and we're sitting down outside on the patio, and then this guy comes out with schnitzel and challah, and then this girl comes out with ice cream, and this guy comes out with challah and dips, and I'm like, what the heck? This is a 5-star resort.
it's ridiculous. Like, we're spoiled. I mean, I hope that, you know, kids from the South who are right now stuck in the center, being put up in some, like, I hope they're getting at least this kind of treatment and more. I mean, it's insane the amount of,
like, the amount of love that you see there.
I have four different tablets. I have, like, wow. I've gotten four. Why do I need four tablets? I have a tablet for each, like, each hand and each foot. I can do four things at once, cross tablets, and they're all different companies too. So it's great. They don't sync with each other. So a lot of work to do that at the end there. But no, it's insane. If I ask, I have to be careful. If I say that, like, oh, it would be cool if I had, you know, a camera.
You'll get it the next day.
It'd be cool if I had a fridge in my room. Like, all of a sudden, a fridge will appear. Poof, like fucking, yeah, donation, Jewish magic. I don't know. Scooter Braun was visiting us, and, like, he went to, his name is Mordechai. This was a soldier. Talk about positive energy. This kid was amazing. And he loved playing all these instruments. And, you know, Scooter was like, hey, is there anything I can get you? Is there anything you're missing? Anything you need? And he's like, I think I've got everything. But, I mean, I do really wish I could play the cello here. And then Scooter Braun, within 2 hours, got a cello.
Whoa.
For this guy. Yeah. And I was like, how'd you do that? Like,
how? Scooter Braun.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. But, like, you've never really spent that much time here. Like, who did you go to?
Yeah.
But, no, it's incredible, the kind of lengths that people have gone to make injured soldiers happy, especially at Sheba. And, you know, there's like, I don't know, concerts and art therapy and people who come to volunteer to do acupuncture and reflexology. And, you know, we don't want for really anything.
Yeah.
And, it's been beautiful to watch everyone come together. And I think Sheba is really a microcosm of what's happening elsewhere in Israel.
So what I was just about to say, I think people are looking for their ways to give back. Every single person I know is looking for their individual way to give back, whether it's challah baking, whether it's volunteering, whether it's humor on social media. Everyone's looking for a way to give back, and I think most people have been doing a phenomenal job at it.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree, and I think it's paying it forward. I think it's starting, you know, more and more that others are doing it. Obviously, the ripple effects of that are... it's a multiplier effect. I mean, more and more people are, I think, volunteering and getting into the spirit of community, and it's been wild to see and just uplifting in the most incredible ways, and that's what helps me to keep a big smile on my face for sure. Then you have some people who you know, it's like, you know that volunteering and bringing food is for them as well. Like, you see it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just they're coming for the soldiers. Yeah, there's some people who literally, first of all, please stop bringing chocolates to Sheba. Like, if anyone's listening and you're going to
public service
injured
announcement, don't bring
soldiers,
chocolate to Sheba.
Yeah, there's a chocolate epidemic. It's like, there's a sweets epidemic. And it's like, we're all trying to get healthy again. Like, this doesn't help. But like, some people will bring their chocolates or their sphinge or their fucking, I don't know what, their... you know, they're so proud of the donuts. Or during Hanukkah, it was terrible.
Oh my gosh.
And like, if you don't take one, they're like, oh, really? But I came all the way from Valbati me Tveria bishvil avil lecha.
And then, like, you have to.
And yeah.
You have no choice.
And it's like, aval ze bishvili. There are some that even say, like, oh, but it's for me. It's not for you. And I'm like, but why do you have to watch me eat this donut? Like, that's going to make you happy? Like, I'm going to get
like,
fat,
yes.
And you're going to be happy? All right. What a sacrifice.
Yeah.
No, but anyway, it's been great. Like, we're all very thankful.
Yeah. And what's kind of like, what's the recovery process like? And real quickly, like, how do you see yourself going back to real normal life eventually?
Yeah, it'll be in phases for mm-hmm. sure. I think that's the healthiest way to do it. So I haven't been working too much. Mm-hmm. I've taken a few here and there, conversations, calls, whatever. But yeah, it'll definitely be in phases. I mean, I was working like 6 days a week, I don't know, 14-hour day. Like, I was working like a mm-hmm. like a madman for the startup for a long time. And to get back to that level is going to take for sure.
Yeah.
For sure a few months and I'll have to ease into it. And recovery time, I don't have one. I don't know when I'll get released from the hospital, but I'm hoping within the next 6 to 8 weeks I'm not going to have to be there full time anymore.
We'll throw you a party. I'll be in charge of it this time.
Amazing. I'm actually retired.
So yeah, you're retired. You always told me you think I'm living your life back in the day. I think you told me that once.
I don't think I've ever said that before.
Not living your life, but I'm
paraphrasing.
I'm the same like party lifestyle as you were back in the day. You did tell me that
I
once.
I think I probably told you something like you have the like you have to take the reins.
Yeah, it's like a torch you pass down.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think you've been doing that. You're throwing a Purim party. Right?
I am. We're throwing a Purim party. Like, March 23rd, Saturday. Everyone come.
You like, I just set you up for that alley-oop?
Link in our story.
Yeah.
No promo code, but first 50 tickets are on sale.
Okay, you're welcome. You saw how smooth that was?
Thank you. That was amazing.
Can you tell I'm in marketing?
CMO. But I think, like I said, everyone's giving back in their own way. I think the Olim and TLV team has been trying to do that through humor. A big part of that has been the Hot Take Thursdays, which we know and love. So we're going to get into those. We're going to debate these. And at the end, decide if they're a hot take or not. You know what a hot take is.
Yeah.
Something that's controversial. Some of these,
should explain it to me, though.
Yeah.
I'm old and...
Yeah. I mean, you're 34 and you're a CMO. CEOs don't know what that is.
You don't have to say my age twice on the show. Like, you said it once already. I think it's enough. Can we edit that out, right? I mean, is that...
We'll edit it. Okay, first hot take. Tahini should be a beverage.
Dun, dun, dun. What are we talking? As like an additive into a shake at Tamara?
Tahini should be a beverage. I see it as a soda thing. Like, not a soda, not a...
Excuse me while I vomit in the corner.
I agree.
Over there. What do you mean you see it? Tahina?
Like when someone submitted
soda?
That when someone submitted this, tahini should be a beverage. It's like you're going to a bar and you're like, oh, instead of a Coke Zero, can I have tahini?
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be wild
It's disgusting.
No, it's great. Like on the other planet that you're describing.
On another planet.
I think that would be a normal drink that someone orders.
On another planet,
sure.
But not here in Tel Aviv as well.
I don't know. Can you imagine tahina soda? It sounds gross.
No, it sounds disgusting.
Like would you tahina juice. Does that sound good to you?
It sounds a little better than tahina.
Tahina juice sounds good to you? So?
That is a hot take. Controversial.
It is a hot take. I will say that tahina is an additive into
a
shake.
Yes, I agree.
Is incredible.
I agree.
Tahina as an additive makes a lot of sense. As the core
beverage,
part of a drink.
Nope.
I don't know. Can someone out there convince us that we're wrong?
Like, I don't think I'll ever be convinced. Next one. Public gyms in parks / on the beach are better than any pay gyms.
Wow. I'm sure the Equinox crowd, you know, the ones who have just kind of transplanted from New York to Tel Aviv are going to say that's ridiculous.
And are now at Benefit TLV.
How can you work out without eucalyptus oil? I mean, is it a workout if you don't have someone hand you a towel on your way to the locker room? No, I think I agree with that, actually.
Interesting.
I think if you had to choose, if it was like
Israelis
the mayor,
would definitely agree with you. Americans wouldn't. Israelis.
Americans wouldn't. I don't know.
Americans wouldn't.
If the mayor came by and was like, "All right, there's two options. We're going to keep all of the existing gyms open, okay, or we're going to keep all of the existing outdoor." Like you had to really choose between. I definitely would think that outdoor wins. I mean, it's free. It's accessible. It's like it serves quite a nice purpose and has a lot larger impact like than space, you know. No offense, space, but
no offense to space.
Actually,
the impact
space.
Is true. Lots of Hawkeyes on the tail it. They always do. They always screw everyone over.
Somehow orange and space. People who don't even have never used Orange as their telecommunications provider and people who have never been to space have like are subscribed and they owe them money. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
I've heard that from quite a few people, actually.
Yeah, it's quite a trap. But yeah, I don't know. Outdoor wins, I think, in my opinion.
I would say the same, only because the Hawkeyes work on the outdoor gyms and tail it. But
oh, that's interesting. That wasn't actually... I have a few bullets for why I think that. That wasn't on my list.
I mean, I wonder why, but...
That's so interesting that you have a different... Yeah.
Wonder why. Okay, next one. Every girl in the city is a yoga or Pilates instructor.
Only if every girl in the city has suddenly stopped being a life coach. I mean, I think that's, that's not true.
Like, that's not true. It's life coach first and then.
Yeah, I think number one is life coach. And then, of course, the average age of the life coach is like 27 because, you know, seen so much. There's so much to give, so much experience in those 27 years. If they've quit the life coaching gig, I think
then
second,
this would be true.
Then next stop in line, sure. What did you, yoga and what else?
Yoga or Pilates.
Oh, yoga or Pilates. Right.
Pilates is trendy right now in Tel Aviv. A lot of girls are Pilates instructors, but nice. I do agree.
Or what is it now? Mindfulness.
Life coach, kind of.
Oh, is that?
Yeah,
is that
it
life
goes hand in hand.
Wellness. Wellness expert.
Yeah.
Great.
Last one. Petah Tikva's bad reputation is unwarranted. Also, how did this Petah Tikva stuff start? Was it Uri Cohen with the free Petah Tikva? You know what I'm talking about? He did this video, free Petah Tikva. Like,
I think it's like, yeah.
Has it always been unwarranted? Like, Petah Tikva has the worst reputation, one of the worst reputations in Israel as a city.
I don't get it. There are a lot of cities where there's not a lot of things like to do in Israel.
I don't think it's just to do. I think it's a stereotype of the people there. Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't like. Why is Petah Tikva on a lower rung than like Ramat HaSharon? I just mean in terms of being boring. I don't mean in terms of the quality of apartments or something.
No, but I think the bad rep Petah Tikva has is because of the people.
It's because of the people.
Yeah, I think like it's Arsim vibes. Yeah.
That's interesting. I don't know. I always, Bat Yam is usually the one that has the bad Arsim rep. I mean, it's
they
being gentrified.
They all do. They all
right
do.
Now.
Yeah.
Everyone's like looking, oh, should I buy an apartment in Bat Yam? The light rail is going to be ready soon. It's like, yeah, you missed the boat 5 years ago. People were already investing.
Not a hot take.
Is it a hot take? It is a hot day, isn't it?
Okay.
I mean,
yeah,
it's a good, it's a controversial topic. Yeah. I'm sure people in fucking Petah Tikva probably really care about this topic a lot.
They're so upset. I have a friend from Petah Tikva who's so upset about it. He's like, girls literally swipe left on Bumble because he's from Petah Tikva. He had to change his location to be like Tel Aviv. but that's the end of our hot takes. And I think that's it. So guys, please rate us on Spotify, tune in on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Play, Google Play, anything else I'm missing, I'm not sure. But Aaron, thank you so much for coming. Aaron is the prime example of what every Olé Olá should strive to be, and we're so lucky.
Please strive to be more. That's important that we end on that. Please strive to be more. That's so sad that I'm a prime example. This is great. Thanks for having me. And wow, what a fun show. עוד יותר, יוצרי התוכן של ישראל. הוקלט באולפני אודיו, המשווקת את ספוטיפיי בישראל.